and welcome to Small Town Mysteries, a show where three longtime friends from Massachusetts tell crazy and heartbreaking true stories filled with the extra flair of small town mystery. I'm Kate, here with Christine.
Hello.
And Rachel.
Hello.
Bringing you our next episode on Tracy Mondebeau. Before we get into that, I'm going to toss it over to Christine, who is covering our missing person for this week. Christine?
So this is actually a kidnapping case. His name is Miguel Eduardo Medina. He has been missing since February 6th, 2024 from Walnut, California. He's little. He was born October 21st, 2022. And his picture is very, very, very cute. He's so precious. We will have it posted on Small Town Mysteries Pod. His hair color is black. He is 3 feet tall. He has brown eyes, weighs about 17 pounds, and he is white and Hispanic. It is believed that Miguel may be in Aguascalientes, Mexico, with his non-custodial mother. The FBI Los Angeles Field Office, the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, and the U.S. Marshals Service, Central District of California, Missing Child Unit, are seeking the public's assistance in locating Miguel. He was last seen February 6th, like I said, at 9:30 a.m., around the 500 block of Grand Avenue in Walnut, California. He had allegedly been picked up by his non-custodial mother, Bridget Benitez, and he has not been returned to his legal guardian. He was last seen in a black 2021 Toyota Camry with California license plate 8WAS968. He was wearing a brown jacket, jeans, and black Adidas shoes. If you have information concerning Miguel, please contact your local FBI office or the nearest American embassy or consulate. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine.
That information and pictures will be up on our Instagram account at Small Town Mysteries Pod. All right, Rach, over to you.
I actually picked a random town this time because, like I said before, I want to hit every single state in the U.S. So one that we have not covered yet is Iowa. I'm going to bring you to Pella, Iowa. All right, so today I'm going to be talking about the murder of Tracy Mondebeau. I hope I'm saying that correctly. If I'm not, just correct us on our Instagram. I'd rather know. I just want to give a quick trigger warning for domestic violence. This crime was fueled by old-fashioned jealousy. So Nicholas, more known as Nick, and that's what I'm going to be calling him, Nick Boat, had separated from his wife of 20 years, Michelle Boat. Nick had moved out of the Boat family household and moved into an apartment with Tracy Mondebeau. Michelle was unable to handle her husband leaving her for another woman. On May 18th, 2020, Michelle followed Tracy to multiple locations and then stabbed her to death once she had finally gotten in to her parking lot complex, which was located in Pella, Iowa. So that's just like a little rundown. Yeah.
Okay. Well, good old jealousy rearing its ugly head.
Yeah, really, really ugly here. Yeah.
Really fully prepared for it to be the guy.
Yeah, well, sometimes it's not the husband. Sometimes it's the ex-wife.
Life comes at you fast.
You know? Hey, girls. Yeah. Girls can be killers too.
100%. That's one of the reasons why I covered this too, because I feel like we don't really see that as much.
Well, and it's statistically a lot less common.
Yes. So first, I'm just going to briefly talk about Pella, Iowa, which is located in Marion County. The population in 2020 was almost 10,500 people, and the area is a little bit less than 9 square miles. So it's not a big town at all. All right, so now I'm going to dig into what happened on May 18th, 2020. So around 8:20 p.m., police were called to an apartment complex in Pella, Iowa, for a possible domestic dispute. The caller told police that two people were arguing. When police arrived at the scene, they found Tracy Mondebeau slumped in her car. Police tried to assist her, but quickly noticed she was dead. She had multiple stab wounds to her chest and had lacerations on her hands, probably from self-defense. It's also important to note that she was still wearing her seatbelt, meaning that Michelle acted very fast once Tracy parked her car.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't even have time to react. Witnesses told police that they saw a struggle occurring between the two women, one being Tracy, who was in the vehicle, and another woman who was outside the vehicle, Michelle. The woman who was arguing with Tracy left in a gray four-door Cadillac, and one witness heard the woman yell, "He don't belong to you."
Oof. Okay.
So, now a little bit more about the messy love triangle that really turned, obviously, toxic and fatal. So, like I said earlier, Michelle and Nick were married for 20 years. Nick stated that they had a terrible relationship. He was living in a loveless marriage. And in addition, claimed that Michelle was abusive. All things changed for Nick when he met Tracy. This is honestly such a meet cute. So they met by accident when Tracy sent him a friend request on Facebook in February of 2020. When describing how they met, Nick states, she was trying to make a friend, but she fat fingered my picture. So she accidentally sent this man a request. And they started talking and eventually started dating.
I don't know if that counts as a meet cute per se, but
the whole fat fingered got me so much. The fat fingered
thing is comical. I also have to wonder if this is one of those things where she told him it was an accident, but like she knew what she was doing, you know? I'm just saying.
On March 8th, the two went on their first date. They went searching for shedded deer antlers, which is a pretty cool first date.
Okay. Okay. Iowa. Iowa dates. Taking notes for when I moved to Iowa.
They both really enjoyed nature and being outdoors. Nick separated from Michelle only 3 days after his first date with Tracy.
After?
Yes.
Okay.
Nick told Michelle that he was tired of fighting. He had met someone new and was moving on. Within a few weeks, Nick moved out of the home that he shared with his wife and two teenage children. And then in April, he moved into an apartment with Tracy. So obviously, like, this is tough. They were married for 20 years and he moved out very fast. And I saw somewhere, but I don't know if it was like a reputable source or not, that he had completely like moved everything out when she was at work. So she came home and he just wasn't there.
I don't know. I guess if he had been in an abusive relationship for so long and he felt safe with this other person, he probably was just trying to cling on to that.
Yeah. I think the bravery that comes with leaving an abusive relationship is regardless of gender. I mean, historically, you see more stories of women leaving abusive relationships, but men are abused. So it's a similar thing of when he found
safety.
Safety. Yes, exactly. And realized he could be safe away from her. Of course he acted fast. I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing, you know? Not that you implied it was or anything.
Was anything said about the kids?
Yeah, I also wondered about that. How were they young kids, I'm assuming? Well, high school maybe?
Teenage.
Teenage? That is tough. That would be really tough as a teenager.
So 4 days after Nick left the Bolt family home, Michelle told him that she refused to get a divorce and allegedly assaulted him. Nick had visible bruising on his back and had a cut on his left eye. After this, a no-contact order was issued. And allegedly, Michelle violated the no-contact order 4 times by calling him and showing up to where he worked. So we have some stalking going on, which I feel like we tend to see a good amount in these domestic violence cases. But like Kate said, we usually see the role switched. It's usually a female. So that's like one of the reasons why I picked this case too, to really highlight abuse happens no matter what gender you are. It doesn't matter. Men get abused too. And we have to talk about it. Police were familiar with Michelle Boat since both Nick and Tracy had previously contacted police complaining about Michelle following them. Police were well aware that Michelle was not happy regarding Nick and Tracy's relationship. Tracy had recently reported an incident to police that scared her in March of 2020. Tracy told police that she was dating Nick Boat, who recently separated from his wife, Michelle Boat, and that one time Michelle had followed Tracy from Pella all the way to Ottumwa, which is over 40 miles away. Tracy contacted police when she realized Michelle was following her and asked for police to meet her at a gas station since she was terrified. Michelle stated that she only followed Tracy to figure out where her husband was currently living so she could beg him to come back home. 2 days after this, Michelle was admitted to a local hospital for mental health-related treatment. She stayed at the hospital for 5 days. So I included that because it's important to note that she did obviously have some mental health issues associated with this. In addition, Michelle violated a no-contact order several times. And in March 2020, Michelle was charged with domestic violence for hitting Nick, which I talked about a little bit earlier. So clearly you can see like escalation happening here. All right, and then after the crime. After discovering Tracy's body, police went to Michelle's house. A gray four-door Cadillac was sitting right outside of her home. And if you don't remember, witnesses reported a gray four-door Cadillac at the scene earlier. The car engine and rotors were still warm, indicating that the car had recently been driven. And in addition, there was visible blood on the outside of the car.
Oh, yeah, that's subtle. Nothing says, "I definitely did not murder anyone," like bloodstains on your vehicle.
Mm-hmm. And the blood matched to Tracy. When police knocked on the door, Michelle opened the door wearing a robe, and her hair was wrapped in a towel. She'd obviously just taken a shower. Police searched her home and found the clothes she was wearing in the washing machine. They also found a pair of latex gloves, which had blood on them. And these latex gloves were shoved, like, inside of the upper part of the tank of the toilet, inside the bathroom. So I feel like that's panicking.
Yes.
They're like, what do I do with this? This is a little gruesome. Not awful, but does make my stomach turn a little bit. They found a clump of Michelle's hair inside of Tracy's hand. So she really fought for her life.
So she definitely fought back.
Yes.
Wow.
Police obtained surveillance footage from the day of Tracy's murder. Michelle went to Nick's place of work at Vermeer Corporation only less than an hour before Tracy's murder. Footage also showed Michelle following Tracy both into and out of the parking lot. Tracy was visiting Nick at work. Apparently, they were just having dinner together. When Tracy left the parking lot, Michelle followed her. Both vehicles left the parking lot at around 8:10 p.m. The phone call to police reporting a dispute was made 10 minutes later. And then just a little bit about Michelle. Michelle Bolt was born on 12/23/1964. At the time of the crime, Michelle was 55 years old. She is currently 59 years old, living at Iowa Correctional Institution for Women. And that's all about Michelle. All right, now on to trial and sentencing. Michelle was charged with first-degree murder, which she pleaded not guilty. Michelle admitted that she stabbed Tracy. However, Michelle claimed that she was provoked to stab her since her husband had left her for a younger woman. Michelle saw the two of them kissing and snapped. So now I'm just going to talk a little bit about the actual trial. So, Kate, get ready because we all know you're going to love this.
I am seated.
There's actually a video of the trial that I could have watched, but I just really didn't want to.
Well, you are not me, and therefore, I do not blame you for not wanting to watch that.
I just didn't want to hear her. I'm sorry. Like, I just didn't.
That's fair enough.
All right. So, first off, I'm going to start with the prosecution's case. The prosecution argued that Tracy's murder was not because of spur-of-the-moment action. It was planned and premeditated attack. The prosecutor described Michelle as scorned, seething, and obsessed, which I sound pretty fitting. She wore gloves, meaning that she was planning on committing a crime. That's premeditation right there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
She had also texted Tracy telling her to stay away from Nick. And a calendar was discovered in Michelle's home, which marked each day since her husband had left her. Okay, now let's talk about the defense's case. The defense strongly urged jury members to consider Michelle's state of mind at the time of the murder. So the time of the murder was in May of 2020. So this was peak COVID. Something to just keep in consideration. So here is a quote from the defense. Quote, "Each of you, remember back to March of last year, how scary your world was. The fear, the chaos, the isolation that we all felt in the early days of the pandemic. That's where Michelle was 69 days before the 18th of May. So that's the backdrop. That's the context. That's the big picture." Not only did they argue that they were in the middle of a pandemic, but in addition, her husband had just left her. She had lost her job working in the laundry room of a hospital, Plus, she had no money to her name. When she was arrested, she only had $6 in her pocket.
Which are all shitty things, but none of those are okay with getting away with murder. Sorry.
No.
Yeah.
Like, sucks, but you can't murder a person.
It's not really much of a defense.
No, it's just like, oh, she was really stressed and all these things were happening to her. Feel sorry for her. No, I don't feel sorry for her.
They're going for the sympathy from the jury, and the jury's not going to sympathize to that.
No.
Because everyone went through it. We all went through COVID. Those first few months, we all were there. We all did that.
I know. That's what I said. Like, we all did it. We all went through COVID. We all experienced it. And I didn't kill anybody.
Yeah, nor would I expect to have that be a viable defense for if I did kill somebody.
No, it's not. 100% not.
No. No.
Don't get me wrong. I do feel like this woman was probably in an awful mental state, and she was probably depressed after her husband left.
Of course, but people are depressed every day, and they don't kill people.
I agree.
Yeah. I think it's important to note.
I also find it kind of ridiculous that they tried to be like, oh, she only had $6 in her pocket. That means nothing. I don't carry cash on me.
Yeah, any given moment, I have less than $6 cash on my person. But that's not defense to murder.
All right, and then finally, here are some quotes from Michelle herself during the trial. Like I said, you can watch the recorded trial on the internet, but meh. So, quote, like my whole life had just walked out the door. There weren't going to be any more Thanksgivings or Christmases without him. I just snapped and I grabbed the knife. And I just stabbed her and I dropped the knife.
I want to believe that. But the gloves is giving premeditation. Otherwise, I would totally buy heat of passion and a lesser charge. But the gloves just scream premeditation.
The fact that she was stalking her, too. Like, that's something that mm-hmm. can really escalate. The fact that she was stalking her mm-hmm. for those long distances, I mean, that right there is in and of itself a crime and a red flag.
I mean, maybe at this point her defense was trying to just get her a lesser charge of voluntary manslaughter or something. Because that's what it sounds like.
I guess I forgot to write this, just remembered. But I guess the defense also argued that since it was peak COVID, she was wearing gloves out to places. But I'm like, come on, dude. Come on.
It's not unfeasible, but it's so attenuated that I would find it hard to believe.
Not that you should do this anyway, but if you were just planning on following somebody and not getting out of your car, why would you wear gloves? Like, you're not even gonna, like, be in the community where you could potentially get COVID. So, like, that doesn't even work.
I don't know.
All right, here's another quote from Michelle. Quote, I wanted to tell her how much I wanted him back, and I wanted her to leave him. However, once Michelle opened Tracy's truck door, Michelle claims that Tracy started attacking her and screaming crazy bitch. I don't blame her.
She had, up to this point, demonstrated some crazy bitch behavior.
Stop!
I don't think that's an unwarranted characterization of her. At that point in time.
On July 1st, 2021, the jury reached a guilty verdict after only 45 minutes of deliberation. Michelle was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. In addition, she was ordered to pay $150,000 in restitution.
Did you already say this, but the knife, like, she would just carry that around in her car?
I didn't see anything about that, which is, like, interesting. Like, yeah.
Why would she have a knife if she wasn't? It was a heat of the moment thing. That's a maybe good point. She has to, like, chop up some corn or something since they're in Iowa.
There you go, Kate.
There we go. There's the corn. I knew we'd bring it in here somehow.
All right, so now I just want to talk a little bit about Tracy. I feel like I rage about this all the time, but it fucking pisses me off because I hate that all these websites and news places or whatever, news related websites, make you pay to see their articles. And it's just like,
yes,
I need to be more conscious about, like, how many times I click on an article, because sometimes I'm just like, don't think about it. I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. And then if I open it again, I can't see it. I'm like, fuck.
This is related. If you ever need a New York Times article, I have a subscription, so let me know. Just throwing that out
there. it's usually like little tiny town local
ones.
Yeah,
it's not usually like New York Times, because the only reason I have a subscription is because of the games. But no, I get that. Like, there's nothing more frustrating than when the information is there, but you can't access it. Because we talk a lot about not being able to find information on people and how hard it is sometimes to write these episodes because you can't find the correct information to accurately report it. Well, what about when it's there, but you can't access it? You know, that's somehow worse.
Kate, are you sure that you didn't get the New York Times subscription for all the New York cases you cover?
No.
That was a good joke.
It was for the games.
Oh.
Burn.
That was a bonus. That was an added bonus of having a New York Times subscription for all the New York cases. Okay, yeah, that was great burn.
Yeah, that was really good.
That was excellent, actually. I have been burned.
Okay, so I was ranting about not being able to see articles, blah, blah, blah. I wasn't able to see this one article that was, like, literally, like, remembering Tracy Mondebo, which is just so frustrating because obviously it's the most important part. So this was all the information I was able to find. So Tracy Throgmorton / Mondebo, so I think she was married at one point, was born on March 18th, 1973. She died at the age of 47 on May 18th, 2020. She had 4 children and 10 grandchildren. So, like, that's a big family.
Whoa.
Yeah. And then here's a quote about Tracy. Quote, Tracy was always a loving and devoted daughter, sister, mother, grandfather, and girlfriend. She was sassy, funny, and always looking on the bright side. So like I said, I wish I had more about Tracy so we could remember her, who she was when she was alive, and not just how she died. So that was my case for this week. I do have like a little short thing at the end. Like I said, this case is a little strange in multiple ways. First of all, we have a female murderer. That's one. And then two, it talks about domestic violence, but a male. Domestic violence of a male, not a female. So I wanted to focus on domestic violence related statistics for men in the United States. About 24 people per minute are victims of rape, physical violence, and or stalking by an intimate partner. That's more than 12 million over the course of one single year. About 50% of both men and women have experienced psychological aggression by an intimate partner. In the U.S., about 1 out of 4 men have reported some form of sexual violence in their lifetime. About 1 in 10 men will experience sexual violence, physical violence, and or stalking by an intimate partner. And then about 1 in 17 or 19 men, I don't know which one it was, I saw both on different websites, were victims of stalking at some point in their lifetime. And then 4% of men have been injured as a result of intimate partner violence. And then men who were stalked were primarily stalked by partners, and it's like 41%. Yeah, so those are some domestic violence related statistics. I just want to make it really clear, if you are experiencing any domestic type of violence, you are not alone. There are so many resources out there to try and help you and support you. There are so many different ways to contact the National Domestic Violence site too, like the hotline. It's no longer just a hotline. You can call 1-800-799-SAFE or 1-800-799-7233. You can also text START to the number 88788. And if you go to the website, www.hotline.org, you can also chat live with somebody on there as well. As we've talked about so many times, it's so hard to get out and completely understandable, but you don't deserve to be there and you deserve to be happy.
Thank you for those statistics and for those resources, Rachel. We will also be posting those resources with the graphic for this episode, so they will be available on our Instagram at Smalltown Mysteries Pod as well. I will make sure to include those because I want to make sure those are accessible to anyone who needs them, especially after listening to an episode that does contain that subject matter. All right. Thank you, Rachel, for your ever careful research.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. And we'll be back next week. After these two hooligans go to Miami for a little bit.
Ooh, I'm excited. We're going to a wedding.
Yeah.
So I will be here holding down the podcast fort, which is a joke because there's absolutely nothing for me to do between now and when the episode comes out. But they're going to go have a weekend. I'm going to work. And we'll be back next week with another episode of Small Time Mysteries Pod. Ooh. Thanks for tuning in.
All right. Come spiral with us next week.
Bye. Bye.